Hello and welcome to Talking Capital. I'm Ian Barnard, CEO of CapGen. Each month, I'm joined by a member of our investment team or a guest from one of the investors in our universe to talk about the investment themes and opportunities that are available today to family investors. What is CapGen? We're a private investment office for families with capital. Our clients are sophisticated, internationally minded investors, and what we do is to help them make the most of their capital and to seek out investment opportunities across any asset class in any region of the world. So in the course of these episodes, you can expect us to cover a globally diversified portfolio of assets and sectors, be that bricks and mortar or derivatives. In summary then, this is a podcast where we discuss the questions that we think are playing on the minds of sophisticated long-term investors. If that sounds up your street, do please subscribe and you'll enjoy a new episode published on the first Thursday of each month. Welcome to Talking Capital. This is the first episode of the second series of three of the new look Talking Capital, where we, over three episodes, look at an opportunity that is exciting for us at the moment and which will or has been, will appear in or was already in client portfolios. So, as with last time, at the start of this series, I'm joined by Robert Sears, our CIO, who's going to help us think about the big picture. So why is this an opportunity? How does it fit into portfolios? And why is it here at the moment? And the opportunity we're going to talk about is in the real estate asset class. So Robert, if I might ask you just to start with to zoom out and caveat it by the fact that this will involve generalizations and oversimplifications. Can you talk us through the sort of experience that real estate's had over the last few years and where you think it sits at the moment? Caveated once again by the fact that this is going to involve generalizing about an asset class that we all know is really about detail.
Thanks. Well, I think real estate itself is very broad. So lots of different ways to play real estate, giving you that full spectrum. But what, in a sense, they give you different payoffs, but also different reactions to the economic environment. But at its heart, what drives all real estate fundamentally is economic growth and also interest rates. And I think that brings us a bit to what we've seen in real estate in the last few years. Why is real estate had a bit of a tough time is primarily, it's been less about the economic growth downturn. Yes, there was a bit of a slowdown in certain sectors, but not broadly across the full economy. But what we've really seen is this repricing of duration risk, of interest rates going up. And this is a big fundamental change. So real estate really benefited from 30, 40 years of falling interest rates from the start of the 80s all the way through to 2020, really. And what we've now seen is this backing up of interest rates back up to more normal levels, one may say, and that repricing of interest rate risk has really sent a shockwave through real estate. And we've seen quite a bit of distress. I mean, arguably, we've seen a period for commercial real estate as bad as the early 90s, as bad as 08 in many dimensions. So it was quite a big sell-off. And it's because a lot of players within the real estate market, real estate in its essence, I suppose, a lot of it depends on leverage, or it can do. And those players who'd over-levered, that increase in interest rates has really put them under stress. And why you don't see the stress all in one go is because it's a sort of slow-moving car crash, because you have to wait for the interest rate for the terms of the debt to come up for refinancing, and that's what we've really been seeing, this difficulty. When a core building that's had too much leverage comes back for refinancing and interest rates are materially higher, actually, often cases the equity holder is completely wiped out, and even the debt holder has been feeling under stress. So that's been, I think, the key heart of the problem for real estate. I think the second big problem is there's more structural issue was around COVID. Certainly within, if we're thinking about some of the sectors which have had stress, if we're thinking about office sector, there has been this pressure of actually COVID led to a change in working environment and accelerated that change. So what we've seen within real estate is some sectors doing really well, some not doing so well. Core real estate has suffered, certainly in lower quality locations, because the real question is how many workers are actually going to turn up for work? Or this percentage number of days in the office has materially decreased, certainly in Europe, compared to what it was in the past. So that's been another key challenge. As well as, we could say, retail suffering from the trend of online shopping. So in a sense, there's been some sectors which have been really challenged from these structural themes. Some sectors have really benefited, though, and we shouldn't paint real estate all with one brush, because if we look at one example or a couple of examples, the move to online shopping has really been fueled behind the theme of logistics and last mile logistics in particular, as we need to build bigger and bigger warehouses to store all the goods and be part of that supply chain. And the other one, data centers. And again, part of this massive increase in demand that we're seeing on a positive side, and that's been one sector that's really done well. Now, those sectors which have done well and have had that trend behind them, pricing has correspondingly gone up and yields have dropped in those sectors, whereas we've seen more stress in those other areas. And arguably, it comes to that sort of value growth trade. There's still a structural growth trend, particularly if we think about data centers, last mile logistics, etc., and industrial warehouses that have benefited, and maybe you can play the growth, but the value trade, which is potentially the areas that have suffered the most and where there's potential to do well, are those areas which have suffered both from rising interest rates, but also some of those structural changes. And that sort of, I think, summarizes where the real estate market is at the moment. It takes a while to find a floor. And I think the big question is how high rates go, which is the harder one to determine. But that's where you can see the opportunity today, the areas of growth and the areas of cheapness.
Robert, thank you. Very helpful. So big picture, in the round, and I stress in the round, it's been a tough few years for real estate, particularly the areas, I guess, that we associate most with investment portfolios, which is the core office market, which has been hit, as you say, by the double whammy of rising rates as well as changing occupational patterns. So you set the scene. Clear, there've been winners, there've been losers. That's always the case. But perhaps it's been a bit more accentuated in recent years. So maybe we can zoom in just a little bit more to the opportunity, which unhelpfully we're going to categorize as opportunistic real estate, which I guess, well, for us anyway, hasn't really been on our agenda for some years. So can you talk a bit, Robert, about how we've got to this point, why it's become an area of interest for us again, and what it looks and feels like? So when we talk about this opportunistic real estate, what actually is that? What does it look like?
Well, I think within real estate, the sort of taxonomy of core plus, value add, opportunistic, in many ways is the risk return spectrum of going from low risk to high risk. But it also encompasses other aspects of risk. And there are other aspects in real estate of sort of leverage. So core actually can have quite a bit of leverage. So the amount of leverage can make a core asset risky or not. But in general, the higher up you go, potentially you can take more leverage. But the other dimension really is the level of active management, what you need to do. So whereas a core building can pretty much be taken where it stands, it's got tenants in place, and it becomes just a yield generating asset. Through that spectrum, you have to get more involved to generate your return. So you maybe starts to be repositioning, let to better tenants, make some changes, through to opportunistic, where actually a lot needs to happen. And it can either be full-on development, repositioning an asset completely, or in those sort of distressed areas, buying something that's in a real distress and needs sort of reorganization. So it is a wide spectrum of things to look at. But I suppose where is the opportunity, even at the moment, I would say, is it the beta? Is it the buying the market and saying, actually, we just think real estate's going up? Or is it about the active management piece? And I think this is something we've said about other asset classes in the past as well. Actually, the beta is still, it's more appealing than it was. Now yields have gone up a bit. but it's not going to give you the returns you're after. I think that's the story of fixed income as well. Real estate benefits from having the inflation link component. So that's where real estate versus fixed income in a world potentially of higher inflation, actually you can get better protection across different subsectors. So that's one attraction of real estate in a world of slightly higher inflation. But still, if we're not expecting rates to fall en masse, you're not going to just benefit from just broadly buying real estate. So you want the more active component. There needs to be a value driver. So it's about having the right active management of assets. So that's where value add and opportunistic. And those terms can, as I said, they're not precise, but you want to be adding value. So it's not just buying an asset and benefiting from falling rates. It's from doing something to it. And there are lots of areas where doing something can give you reward. So I think that's where we're seeing the biggest opportunity, I suppose, is finding a good active manager, trying to find an area, two possible areas. One is with trends that we think they can really benefit from. So buying assets, for example, that benefit from those trends of greater online shopping or use of data centers. So those trends can be pretty appealing, but with a good active manager, but buying at a good price, because buying the price in real estate of you buy at is crucial. So can you generate cheap assets? In a way, are there some forced sellers? And that's where the difficulty of the last few years makes it particularly appealing, because there could be some forced sellers who, when they're refinancing, where you can pick up those assets quite cheaply. So I think that's the hunting ground of trying to find assets which can be bought cheaply with a good active manager who can add value in areas potentially where you've got a bit of the trend at your back, at least. So I think that's what we've been looking to add. So it isn't a broad-based adding lots of real estate, but it's finding the right manager to benefit from these conditions. And I suppose we, as usual, across our asset classes, keep the bar high. So you're always on the lookout to try and find top talent that can benefit from some of those trends. And in the last few years, we found some in different areas. We found one real estate manager based in Iberia who really fits that description really well in all three areas, but a really class operator that can deliver that added value. And at the moment, we're looking and targeting a manager potentially that can benefit from some of those dislocations in the US. Again, that's happening more slower. So you want the person who's got experience, who can take advantage of the situation before them with a broad enough mandate. But I would say one of those levels we look at about leverage, that risk often opportunistic implies lots of leverage risk. Actually, you can get those returns in a dislocated area with a good operator with lower leverage, which I think is more appealing. So if you can find a manager that doesn't take too much leverage risk, you can take some of those other risks. I think it is a better place to be. So I think if you, even within opportunistic, I think finding a manager with lower leverage. And the other component, I think, which we are seeing as well, is where is the opportunity? It's not just in the equity. So again, that's the spectrum of how you own the asset, where you are in the capital stack. Actually, the debt lending to real estate can be really appealing in these areas. So with rates going up, people under distress, being able to invest in equity and debt, giving the manager that flexibility, or just investing in real estate debt, can be really appealing on a risk-reward basis. So you can get decent returns, double-digit returns, buy an asset with protection from your position in the capital structure, but also that in some cases, the potential to become the equity holder in the future. So I think that's a particularly appealing sweet spot as well. So finding those distressed sellers, but finding the right place on the to enter in the capital structure, I think is really, really appealing for us today as well.
Let's move on and think about how this fits into portfolios, Robert. And you drew the contradistinction with fixed income. Yes, on the one hand, real estate like fixed income, very driven by market interest rates. On the other hand, bonds, particularly nominal bonds, clean or inflation-linked bonds, but nominal bonds, super sensitive and hugely harmed by inflation, whereas real estate, to some extent, depending on the type of inflation you get and et cetera, has some inflation hedging characteristics. So there's one distinction. And clearly, real estate, much of what we're talking about, particularly on the equity side, tends to be a private asset. But can you, alongside that, talk about how you see this fitting into portfolios? You mentioned as well that it's got, you know, you can do credit and you can do equity. Does it replace something? Does it stand alone by itself? Should we think about it as a better alternative to fixed income, or is that actually not a helpful framework?
I suppose it depends on the type of exposure. If you were looking at an alternative for fixed income, you would go actually on the lower risk end and it'd be a more core asset, which I don't think that can be relatively appealing given the sort of relative valuations of fixed income at the moment. But then you lose out on liquidity. So I think that's not the area we're particularly looking at today. We're looking more about generating returns. So it's more in your return generating piece of your portfolio. And if you like, I think the framework we have, total portfolio approach, is to what's your opportunity cost of capital. It's you've got a mix of risks you're taking in terms of in your return generating piece, you want exposure to economic growth, and you could buy public equities, you could buy private equity, you could buy credit. So there are lots of ways you can get that exposure. I think real estate gives you a particular sort of bucket of those. The benefits are they tend to be a bit more inflation-linked protection, which can be quite appealing. There is also the downside protection in many cases, again, depending on the payout, but from having the asset-backed nature of the investment. So I think that can be another appealing part. But in terms of that, it's your opportunity is, can I invest on something else to make money? And here, as much as we've said is about just buying the beta, it's more about the active management. It's actually, can you buy some idiosyncratic risk that you're taking on from redeveloping an asset or exposure to a particular sort of skill set that you're getting rewarded for? So I think that's where we're seeing more of the opportunity. So finding a good manager that can add some idiosyncratic return and risk by redeveloping an asset, they can generate some return that's not as correlated to markets. But your broad exposure that you're replacing is a broad sort of mix of equity risk, if you like. So if you think of it in terms of your budget, it's taking out some equity risk that you could have elsewhere. Yes, it's less liquid, but with that benefit of potential some inflation linked protection and some more idiosyncratic return. I think the mandates we're looking at can morph between equity and debt, which I think, again, it gives you a high enough return in this case to still be in that return generating bucket, but letting the manager have the flexibility to move between those ways of getting the exposure, I think is really crucial. Because if you can get an equity-like return with a debt instrument, that's a very good trade-off to make. So I think, and we're in this situation where that's a potentially good opportunity set. So that's what we're looking for. We're looking for those high-quality managers that can take advantage of dislocation, add some idiosyncratic return from their active management of assets, and placing it within that return-generating piece of the portfolio, I think, is the combination of risk that we and returns that we're looking for.
And you talked about cost of capital. How much? What returns should we be thinking about? And presumably not low single digits. Is this high single digits or low double digits, late teens? How? And you've made clear that this is a high returning, return driving. This is not about it. It's not a diversifier. So that's clear. But when in your head you price this in terms of opportunity cost of capital and expected returns, where are you?
For those strategies with more equity risk component to it, so a private equity structure, I think definitely you want the net IRR to be 15 to 20%. And if a multiple can be net 1.7 to 2x, I think that's good environment. I think in this environment, potentially, if you choose the right manager in the right place, you should do a bit better than that. So it should be an environment. And that's a bit to that timing. You can find these opportunities throughout a cycle. I don't think you necessarily always need to time going in. But I think some of these markets are a bit more dislocated. So you should be able to be slightly higher than the sort of neutral opportunity cost of capital in those areas. And that's certainly what we've been looking for. So we're pleased with the managers we've added so far, and we're looking to add some more, particularly to take advantage in the US. Although I should say the biggest problem or issue with the US for offshore investors is often the tax situation. So that, again, is another component to finding exposure to the market without incurring too high of a tax burden. So I think that's a big, big issue. And one of the reasons why, along the spectrum of things we look at, I think we've focused more on the sort of private equity style real estate. Actually, there can be ways to get this exposure for different portfolios within REITs and the public market, and private debt as well. So there are a number of other instruments we're looking at, but I think for the high returning component, certainly it's in that private equity style structure on the equity side.
So Robert, you've moving on to the final topic, you've sketched out, you've used a black pen to sketch the outline of the particular opportunity we're talking about. It's we have someone that's active in Europe, Iberia, really. This is going to be the US, probably more likely to be equity, although maybe there's some credit. It's all going to be about active management. The opportunity will be to come in to, I suppose, classically good assets with poor capital structures, or potentially good assets that just need a little bit of tender love and care to lift them up. But if you could, having done the pen and ink outline, if you could colour in a bit more what you think strategically where this is going to go, but also think about some of the trades. I mean, obviously, just guessing what somebody's going to do in the future, but given what we know now, what you think some of the trades might be that would go into this particular opportunity?
So I think there are different pieces to it. So I think from focusing on where do we see opportunity today, I think there's buying distressed assets at cheap prices, so quality assets with distressed owners, I think is a key area to target. And there's certainly been quite a bit of that in the US. And if you think more distressed sectors, and more sectors like office sector in particular, would be an example. When we were talking about earlier, there are other sectors which give you different exposures. And one other example would be, whereas an office building with a long let tenant can behave more like a bond. Actually, if you think of hospitality, where you're re-letting every day, it becomes far more equity-like. So I think there are these different other sectors to look at. So hospitality is an area where there has been opportunities to look at as well, but very different component. I think one area which we find very appealing, and we've looked at other exposures, has been in the data center sector. And that, I think, clearly is an area of huge demand. And it's not just from AI, it's as much about cloud computing and storage. So you see this high demand into the future, high quality tenants. So I think the risk is, rather than an office building with lots of different tenants and sort of low risk in that way, you have quite concentrated risk, but it's the high quality tenants with the hyperscalers with very, very good credit ratings and very safe capital structures. So I think that can be very appealing. So large demand, long let buildings. And also, I think the other component is Europe in versus the US. In that case, actually, Europe poses a better hunting ground in many ways, because it's been less penetrated so far. Whereas the US, there's lots of data centers. Europe, more fragmented market. There's still going to be demand. There's regulatory pressure to make the centers be within Europe. So particularly in the tier two, tier three cities in Europe, I think there's plenty of scope for providing data centers. So I think that, again, is an appealing area. We've seen that we're looking for exposure in those areas. I think, turning back to what I said before, I think generating that equity-like return through debt, I think I'd expect to see quite a lot of that. So I think there are a lot of distressed debt securities in real estate which can give you that exposure to assets that you actually like. So I think that is going to be a big trade that we'd potentially look to see. The other avenue, I think, is in last mile logistics, open outdoor logistics as well. I think those are massive growing areas. So either repositioning assets, buying the land, but those assets can really benefit from that growing trend. And I think, again, if you think about geography, that's where potentially real estate is a little bit slow moving. So you can see some of the trends work in one region and it takes a while to work around the globe. So there, in a way, I think one of our managers calls it copy and paste, but you could see a strategy work and there's enough time to actually respond and do it in other regions that come a bit later. So I think although those trends in data centers and logistics and industrial have had a long time behind them, actually, if you choose the right region, you can benefit from it as well. So I think we're going to see more of that sort of copy and paste style approach. I think those are some of the areas that we'd expect to see opportunities going forward.
What about the much vaunted office to residential? That's been much talked about. You and I, Robert, know some examples from London where in theory that's a great idea, but the former office buildings just have structural reasons why, you know, they're going to really, really struggle to be residential. Yes, there is demand for residential in the area in which that former office building sits, but the office building itself is so, from a residential point of view, so structurally flawed, you really can't do anything about it. So it is happening, but there's more talk than the right. Is that something that's going to be easier to do in the US, do you think?
I think potentially easier in the US, but I would say, just to reiterate that point, it's quite a hard... Again, do you want to do the easy things first rather than the hard things? And I think there are a lot of difficulties and reasons why an office building is not going to be the right sort of starting point in terms of the floor plate and the size of the windows and where they're located. So it's not necessarily an easy trade or something to do first up. In fact, some of these areas, if you think some of the buildings, slightly lower buildings in San Francisco as an example, or let's take Canary Wharf in London, I think the real reality is the pricing is going to get so bad that eventually you can knock down the building and rebuild. I think that's where the pricing has to get that distressed before it becomes as appealing. So I don't think people are necessarily jumping in to try and do those trades first up. However, things we've seen, a good example would be office building that's in a good area could be repurposed as a laboratory for sciences. And that's actually a growing area. The repurposing can be done quite easily. So you don't have to necessarily knock down the floor plate, like the floor plate. So I think the way of repurposing that building is a lot easier. And we've seen that done within Europe very successfully. And that you know, dramatic increase in valuations just from repurposing those buildings. So I think it's less, I think that's an example where not the jump to residential, but actually there are areas and other owners that can benefit from the sort of less demand needed for office space. There's plenty of demand needed in growing sort of sciences, AI developments. So there's plenty of other owners for buildings where the change of use can be a bit easier to incorporate.
Yeah, I think Ross sometimes talks about beds, meds and sheds, doesn't he? Sheds being logistic, beds being hospitality and meds being, you know, what seems to be a secular growth in demand for medical facilities, whether that is providing primary care facilities. So in a way, last mile primary care, or it's laboratory testing or some other sort of middle back office medical use. We've seen quite a lot of demand for that. That seems to be a growth area. And before we wrap up, Robert, any final thoughts on this? We're obviously we're very excited by it. What about the timeline, do you think, from here?
I suppose it's as I said, slow moving car crash would be my description. So it's not been the market you want to jump in and buy the beta and just buy offices because they're beaten up. I think there's time to do it in stages. It's more about finding the right manager. So I don't think it's a rush to just adding beta. So I think finding the right position and sort of staging or increasing your exposure slowly over time, I think, is the right way to approach it. Alongside, I think some of those areas like data centers, actually you can increase that a bit quicker. So I think the opportunity set potentially there is a bit sooner. Some of the distress, you can wait a bit longer to get exposure. But as an example, we're not rushing to buy REITs in the public market in this environment. I think that has to be said. And the pressure from rates is a story that hasn't played its way out yet. So I think we're still in this big debate about, is a recession coming or not? But the biggest pressure in markets as we speak at the moment is the increasing rates in the long end of the curve that we're seeing around the world. And one example of a region where we really like for real estate, Japan. Japan's been a great area. Suddenly with increased inflation, actually Japanese assets, in particular office, but also more broadly hospitality assets, hotels. There's been plenty of ways to get a positive return in Japan from investing in real estate. But there we are seeing this explosion upwards, which again, reverberating around the rest of the world in long-term yields. So that's another reason, I think, on timing, you can be a bit more cautious, because when we reach that climax of rates going up, that will give it more opportunity in real estate, again, with a lag. So I think if that's not reached the maximum point of interest rates going up, I think you've still got more time to increase your real estate exposure selectively.
Yes, exactly, Robert. And thank you for that. And I think that is the key point, that the opportunity very much lies ahead. We've got used in private markets to V-shaped downturns where prices might correct, as we've seen in the last couple of months, but they can bounce up again very quickly. Whereas in private markets, it all moves more slowly. And I think the point you were making there earlier, Robert, is alternative uses for real estate are not as straightforward as they might seem conceptually. Yes, of course, there are alternative uses or upgrading, but actually it takes time and money and care and active management. And so that opportunity to deploy capital, I think is very much ahead of us. So thank you very much. That's it from us. Thank you for joining. The next episode will focus on the search process that gets us to the particular name that we're hoping to use in this space. So as I say, thank you again for joining us and hope you'll join us next time. Bye-bye.
A link to Capgen's privacy notice and full terms can be found in this podcast summary description and on our website.